9 o'clock in the morning, this is pretty good. I think basically we're night people. My name is Harriet, and I do sometimes need an introduction. I need to know who I am, especially at 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Coral Gables group. Hi, everybody. Which is in Dade County. It's in the city of Coral Gables. I live in Miami. And I've been a member of that group for 30 years. I've been sober 33 and a half years. My sobriety date is January 14th, 1956. And don't tell me you weren't even born yet. Because I was reborn then, and I want to be just as new as you are, or as young as. I just told someone before the meeting, Sandy, I said, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I came on my 39th birthday. I surrendered completely and took my last drink on my birthday, my 39th, and I was old. I was broken down. I was about 200 pounds, and I was just out of the mental ward of a veterans hospital. I had no place to go. Nobody wanted me. I was to drink again on that January the 9th in 1956. And on Saturday morning, January the 14th, my birthday, I had just gotten off of a train and literally stood there and said, where will I go next? I was in Miami and had nowhere to go. Fortunately, I had a family member in that city, and I went there. And from there, my recovery started. But I came to a group called I went to a club room, the Anana Club, which is no longer in existence. In Miami, you will hear people at my sobriety time often say, well, at the old Anana, we used to do this, and the old Anana, we used to do that. And at the old Anana, which is now, it was then the Inn Anana Club, this 200-pounder with absolutely nothing going for her went to that club room. And I told them that I needed to get a job, and they said, no, not yet. And I said, well, I have to find a place to live other than a room at my cousin's house. And they said, no, not yet. And then I said, oh, look at that cute fella over there. And they said, no, not yet. But I was so old, he wouldn't have looked at me right then anyway. The difference today is that 33 years later, I'm young, I'm vibrant. While I'm retired, 4 years ago, I took a temporary part-time job, and I'm still there. I'm now in showbiz, you know. I'm working for a theater. And I'm just having a wonderful time with my sobriety. I went to this Anana Club, and I didn't understand what a club was. I saw people collecting a dollar every month for dues, and I said, I thought AA was free. And they said, well, it is. You don't have to pay anything. I said, well, why are people paying a dollar a month? Well, they belong to the club. I said, what's the big deal about the club? And they said, well, then you can vote. I said, well, what do you vote on? Oh, nothing. Nothing important. Maybe we'll vote for the treasurer and the chairman and that. And I said, well, who's that? And they said, well, I don't know right now. He took the money last week and ran. That sounded like a good deal to me, so I became a member of the club. And I paid my dollar a month for a long time. In fact, it was cheap because if you paid $10, you paid for the year. You got 2 months free. And I kind of kept going to that club room, and I went to Monday nights, and I went to Wednesday nights. It was one of those places that had a meeting every night of the week. And on Sunday nights, all the groups met together, and it was a huge room. I venture to say it was almost as big as this room. And some Sunday nights, it was standing room only. But this is 33 years ago when we had 16 groups in the Miami area, and everybody in town came Sunday night, and you knew everybody. And it was a great feeling. I'm so grateful that I had that opportunity in those days to be able to do that. Today I run into people and I say, oh, you must be new, and they say, I'm sober 4 years. You know? Because we don't see as many people anymore. We're spread out all over Dade County, and I'm sure that you are in these bigger cities. But some of you probably come from the smaller cities in Florida, and perhaps you're experiencing much of the same things that we did in the early days in Miami, and you're going to grow too. And this, I didn't know anything about belonging to a group, you see. I've gotten interested in this club business. And today, I don't care for clubs. I think they're neat things to have, but I don't want to be part of them. I believe in home groups, and this is the topic for our workshop. I was still not feeling too comfortable at this AA room. I'm still a loner. I was beginning to lose a little bit of that flab that came from the from the drinking. The bloat was going down. I was beginning to look better, and I was taking baths. You know, I was a dirty drunk. I really was. I hated to bathe. I fell down in the bathtub one time, and from then on I wouldn't get in a bathtub. And so I began to bathe not only once a day but sometimes twice a day, and I began to take some pride in my. And I believe in pride. There's the right kind of pride to have. And I began to take pride in my appearance. And I began to get my hair shampooed and set. And I began to manicure my nails. And I began to look better and feel better. And one night at the Wednesday night meeting, the secretary stood up and said, if you're not a member of any group and you'd like to belong to our group, we'd love to have you be a member of this group, the Wednesday night group. And I put my hand up and I said, I'd like to be a member of your group. No one had ever asked me to be a member of their group before. And this was 6 weeks into sobriety. And they said, welcome, you're now a member of the group. And that's all I had to do. And that group became my home base. And about a week after that, they handed me an envelope, just a regular business-sized envelope, and it had some crinkly stuff in it, and they handed it to me and said, you're now the treasurer. And I think that in those days we had like $4.98. And out of that $4.98, we bought a little literature. We paid our share of the rent. 10% of our collection went to the rent for the club. And I became the treasurer. Then they handed me another sheet of paper with 16 names and telephone numbers. And they said, these are the names of the secretaries of the other groups. You're the program chairman now. I said, what do I do? And they said, you call these people up and we make arrangements to change meetings. And I began to be part of. This was my home group. And I think the benefit, it's just like the word home means to most of us. A home is a place for protection, a place for communing. It's a place to be comfortable with your family members. It's a place where people care about you. If you're not there, they call you up and say, hey, where were you last night? You sick? Do you need me? Or, hey, was that television program more important? We were just beginning to have good television back then. And you remember Playhouse 90? We all stayed home the night they did Days of Wine and Roses. Nobody went to a meeting. but we all were talking by phone. A home group is a place where we begin to communicate with one another. We begin to hear other people's ideas. Some of them are not so good. Some of them are excellent. And we begin to listen to people we don't even know. And sometimes we think we don't even like them. But we learn very quickly that in this home group, we must love each other. We must stick together, or some of us will die. Now, this is the whole thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. Everywhere you go in the world today, you can find AA, almost anywhere. And you love these people instinctively. Walk into a room full of strangers that don't even speak English, and you can say, I love you, and they know what you mean. I remember going into I flew into Mexico City one day completely unexpectedly. I had been in California, and it was one of those spur-of-the-moment trips. And I got into Mexico City, and I checked into a hotel without a reservation, and I said, I better find AA. What am I doing here? I'd just gotten through a nasty divorce, and I was running. I was sober, but I was running. And I checked in, and I called AA. And they gave me an address, and I took the taxi cab, took me there. And he kind of shook his head because we were going in that terrible part of town that so many AA meetings are held in. A terrible place. And it was upstairs, of course, over a dingy bar. All AA rooms in the early days were over dingy bars and dark staircases. And I went up, and the taxi driver said he'd wait for me. I said, no, no, you don't need to wait for me. And he really looked apprehensive. And I walked up into that club room with all Mexican people, and I said, in my best Spanish, my name is Harriet. That's my best Spanish. But I could say alcoholic. You know, I figured that was a good accent. But they knew Miami, Florida. And they all got up and came over and hugged me, men and women, mostly men, because the women just weren't too much in evidence. But this is the way it has been in all my travels. But coming back to my home group then and sharing with one another. Home groups, when you get active in your home group, not only perhaps the secretary, the treasurer, you're representing the group, but intergroup or general service, this becomes your home base. And it's what we're all looking for, I think, is comfortability with self, being able to like self. This is what our fourth step inventory starts us on the road to beginning to know ourselves and then doing something about it. Don't forget the doing something about it. And changing. And it's our group that will help us to do this. Now, this is your workshop. And some of you may have started small groups in your hometown. Some of you may have just joined a small group or a large group. And you're still sitting perhaps over in the side feeling a little lonely. You come in late and you sit in the back row and hope nobody sees you because you don't want to talk. You might get rejected. Sometimes we come in with a book or a magazine and we pretend that that's so interesting and maybe have it upside down and pretend we're reading, you know, and we're really listening. But the book is a protection because, again, we might be looking afraid of rejection. If you're afraid to participate, I suggest that you sit in the front row and participation will come to you. And if you sit in the back row, we might honor your request for privacy. But this is not the way AA is supposed to be. We're ready to welcome you with open arms, to put our arms around you and say, and that was so wonderful to me, you see, because no one had put their arms around me in a long time. And I felt dirty. And I cringed because I didn't want to dirty you. And not too long ago, I asked a young lady, brand new, to come with me in my car to a meeting. And she hesitated before getting into my car. And I knew exactly what she was thinking because I had done the same thing. I felt so dirty, I didn't want to get into some clean AA member's clean car because I would dirty it with my guilty conscience, my guilty presence. And so I just put my arms around her and I said, look, come on in. This is, we're going to an AA meeting. And she finally got in, but she later shared with me exactly what I knew what she was feeling. We come to know the newcomer's feelings because we've been there. And this is one of the great benefits of a home group. It took about 7 minutes, Lance, to do the preliminaries this morning. I'm so glad to hear the traditions read first. My group won't do them at all. My group will let us do the preamble, what is AA, and then we read how it works. But I have, over the years, several times brought up at business meetings, and they will not let us do the traditions. It is the traditions that hold us together. And I believe it's marvelous that when every AA group does read them. Some groups even go ahead and read the 12 promises, which I don't care for because I think the book is full of promises. And I think sometimes it gives the newcomer that those 12 promises are the only 12 they're going to get. Well, they're 12 good ones, that's true. But there's so many more promises. And then, of course, the 12 concepts in the short form can be read, too. So the 12 traditions, we say, are why it works. And let a group get too far away from those traditions, and they're going to be sick, and they may die. Just as you and I, if we get too far away from our steps, may get sick, and we may die. We may not stay sober. And so it is with the traditions. We need to guide them, use them as guides, and to guard the life of our fellowship. I'd like to ask some of you to come up here and share. This particular session is being recorded, which is why we would ask that you come up here to speak into the microphone so your comments or experience. That's what we're here to share, is experience and strength and hope. So please come up and share on your home group the benefits, and maybe if you have a problem, I can't solve your problems, but perhaps someone else can offer their experience. And that's what our 12 Steps and 12 Traditions book shares with us, particularly in the traditions, sharing the experience of groups around the United States and Canada, which in the early days made all the mistakes for us. And so if we follow those directions, we won't repeat the same mistakes twice, or maybe the third time or the fourth. Because Bill Wilson said himself, he says, when you do these things again, he doesn't say if you should do them, because we are alcoholics and we always think, well, they couldn't do it, but I can. So I'd like to ask anyone to come up and share. I'm going to ask Deborah to come up and share, and then perhaps some of the others will too.
My name is Deborah Kelly, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a member of the Pine Ridge Group over in Naples. And the reason Harriet asked me to share is I shared with her before the meeting. I was here last year and had a lot of questions about home group and was really ready to quit because there just was no cohesiveness and there's no togetherness, and the chairman of the group didn't even know what traditions were, and it was a real mess. And I asked a lot of questions and I got a lot of feedback, and then at the state convention last year, I kind of cornered Harriet again and picked her brain some more. And what I got from them, and from Harriet especially, was keep in there punching. You know, you're on the right track and the traditions are important. And I came here this year again and wanted to tell her that a lot of the things that she had told me and that I had learned last year at this conference, we put into practice, and that it's finally working. And just in the last few months, it's finally working. But we had to keep in there punching. One thing that I'd love to report to Harriet is that the traditions, we fought for the traditions, and we had read them, the whole traditions, for a while, but now we correspond the month of the year to the tradition, and it's read at all of our home group meetings. We have 7 home group meetings. And another thing that we are using now that might help somebody else is that at the beginning of the meeting, before how it works, we say, would you turn to the person front to back, side to side, and say hello? We don't want anybody to leave this meeting without having said hello and met another person. But you can't say you left and you didn't know anybody or nobody said hello to you. And another thing we do is at the end of the meeting, we ask if there was anybody available for temporary sponsorship. Because I don't know about you, but there's so many of us who have asked 6 and 7 people to be a sponsor and been rejected. And at that stage of the game, the last thing we need is rejection. And when there's somebody sitting there with their hands held up, that this person will not reject me, I can go and ask them. It really helps. And it was like pulling teeth to get people to do that and to get people to stand up. And now people are, just in the last few months, starting to stand up and say that they'll be a sponsor to somebody. We've come a long way with booking. Nobody in Naples seems to want to do that, book other groups to come in and put on meetings for us. And finally, after booking many, many groups, we were asked as a group to go and put on the meetings in Cape Coral for a whole month. And it was almost the start of a cohesiveness for us. We got together and we went up there, and there was one weekend we went up with 3 carloads of people, and that was a real step in the right direction for us, and go out to get something to eat afterwards and get a little bit close. And now we are thinking about, and we've had a lot of show of hands, of going to the sponsorship weekend on the West Coast that's going to be in August as a group to learn more about the group. I'd still like to know from other people and from Harriet how you attract people to the group, because we're still small in number and have a lot of newcomers. But the other thing I want to share with you is that so many times during that year, I was so scared. I was so scared of not fitting again and being rejected by so many people in AA, because I didn't want to be labeled as pushy or Miss AA, you know, because my husband and I are really strong into the program and really feel strongly about traditions, and I feel strongly about that triangle. You know, that triangle is 3 sides, and people come into this program and people sponsor people in this program and they give them 1/3 of that triangle, and there's 3 parts to it. And when I bring people in and sponsor them, I give them unity, I give them service, and I give them recovery all at the same time. and tell them that there's more than just recovery to this program. We got to do the whole ball, you know. But there was many times when I think, oh, people are not going to like me again, and here I go again. I'm not going to fit in here either, and they're going to talk about me, and maybe I'm getting a little too pushy, or, you know, and I try to pull back, and Harriet's words would come back to me, keep in there. You've got to just keep in there, and eventually it will turn out all right, and people will come around. And I'm just so happy to be here again and to say that the group is finally coming around, and out of our 7 meetings, I kept saying, we've got to have one meeting where we all meet. We can't be scattered out. We'll never get to know each other. And now on Sunday night at 8:30 in the back room, we have an As Bill Sees It meeting, and we all go, and then we all go to Perkins afterwards and socialize together. And this has been going on for about 5 or 6 weeks now, and it's just great to finally see it come together. So if you're having trouble with a home group and you feel like joining another one that knows what they're doing, hang in there, because I'm here to tell you, it works. Thank you, Harry.
And making a group attractive, you know, it tells us that we are, our tradition says attraction rather than promotion. And I think one of the attractions is having an attractive room to meet in, a bright, cheerful room, an attractive setup. And I think AA is not a charm school, it's not a beauty school, but I think that we should look nice. I think you walk into the dingy basement someplace and a bunch of people running around in torn up jeans and shirts that are falling off, I don't think that's very attractive. I don't mind the jeans if they're clean, and I don't mind a t-shirt if it's clean and not torn. But I don't want to go with raggedy people anymore. That's who I drank with. You know. And so I think we should make everything look attractive and be attractive and comb our hair. And I know style is not to comb it these days. I see it going every which way. But if that's your group, that's your group. Also, I hate to use the word good speakers, but you've got to have speakers that talk AA. You've got to hear speakers that are talking Basic Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book 12 and 12. And if you're having this kind of meeting, I think you're going to attract the people that want to stay sober and that want the sobriety that comes with not drinking. There was something else she mentioned that I was going to comment on, and I don't remember now. Would anybody else like to come up and share? Pat? See, if you don't put your hand up, you get called on.
I didn't have my hand up. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Victory Group in Fort Lauderdale, and I'm Pat Murphy. Hi, everyone. As Harriet was speaking in the beginning, I really identified with her. I, too, was well over 200 pounds. And I, too, had stopped taking showers because I kept getting the water in the glass, and I didn't want water in the glass. So when I came in, I never thought I'd belong. Never. And when I was 6 months sober, I became a member of the Intercoastal Group in Pompano Beach. And the Intercoastal Group is known for its age. I mean, they are very elderly people, and I was a little short of my 39th birthday, so I was a kid compared to these people. And the first time I shared at that meeting, I was new in the program, and I took my fifth step at the podium. Names, dates, events, positions. I mean, I just went into the whole thing, and I could hear them going, oh, and I thought they were enjoying it. You know, I thought, oh, I got them. You know, I got these people, and I realized at the end of it that they were shocked. I mean, that you just didn't do that in this group. And 3 months later, they elected me treasurer. And again, I thought, oh, my God, I've arrived. And we met 3 nights a week, and I found out nobody else wanted it. And so there I was. I was treasurer, and then I was secretary, and I had to get up and speak at the microphone. And I had a thing about microphones. I really believed that one day I was going to swallow one. So I got real nervous, and I started a new group. I mean, that's exactly why I started a new group. I was too nervous to speak at that microphone, and I couldn't tell them. I couldn't share that with you people. I could never share what I felt. Patty last night talked about the feeling in the room. Well, I didn't know what the feeling in the room was because I was so full of my own feelings. I couldn't get out of my own feelings to feel what was happening in the room. And I thought, well, gee, you know, I have to get away from here. So I got a coffee pot and a dozen donuts, and I went down the street and started a new group. And the hardest thing I ever had to do was to let go of that group, to move over and make room for others, because I had started it. And I knew how this group should work. And I knew how it should be run. And I ran it. I mean, I ran this group for at least almost 2 years. And newcomers started coming in, and they wanted changes. And Pat Murphy didn't want changes. I wanted it run the way I wanted it run. And I showed them. I left the group. And I knew the group was going to fall apart. And that group has grown. It's a wonderful... Every once in a while, I go back to visit, because it's a very humbling experience. They didn't need me. I needed them. And I was not aware of that. And I am convinced today that many, many groups in AA continue to function in spite of us. That the traditions aren't read at a lot of meetings, and things aren't exactly, quote-unquote, perfect at meetings. But they work in spite of us. AA works and continues to work. And if the group is not working right, then it will fold. There is one ultimate authority, and that one is God. And if we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing, that group will dissolve. It will fall apart. It will not be able to stand up. So, you know, I don't get too paranoid about whether or not everybody reads traditions. The important thing is, are we living the traditions, not are we reading the traditions? And in my home group, we do what I forget the girl's name. I spoke to her this morning. Deb, hi. And we do read one tradition every meeting. I have a group that meets, God love us, 6 days a week at 8:30 in the morning in downtown Fort Lauderdale now. And we have people who literally are dumpster residents to people who pull up in Porsches and Mercedes and all those good little cars that cost more than where I live. And, you know, we have a tremendous variety of people in that room. And it works in spite of us. You know, in the room, the church gave us a room, and we have all the slogans painted all around the room. It's a filthy church in a filthy neighborhood. And you walk in that room, and it's like a fairy tale. It's like a little oasis away from all the garbage. And the people come in the morning, and they sit next to you, and they're picking the stuff off them, the way I used to pick stuff off me. And nobody moves away. Nobody says, hey, you don't belong here. Even if you don't say you're an alcoholic, you're welcome. And sometimes we have fights about that. We're going to lock the doors. We're going to keep them out. You know, and they keep coming in. And we have to keep moving over for them. The home group to me has been the most important thing in my life, the most important thing in this program for me, because it's where I really belong. Thanks for listening to me, Howard.
Both of these ladies obviously have been very active in their group. Some of you are not not active in your group. You just come to meetings, and that's fine. There are doers and there are sitters, and we need both, and we have both, and we love them all. You know, the doers, I remember what Deborah was saying, we do get called Miss AA, or she thinks she's Mrs. AA. Or who does he think he is? Mr. AA. He thinks he's Bill Wilson incarnated. Well, the doers get that. And sometimes it's the sitters who say it. But I'll tell you some of those... Sometimes I'd like to be a sitter. We have one lady who's a sitter. But she sits with her arms around the newcomer who's puking and sick and needs love. And she's sitting there whispering to her and say, it's going to be all right, honey. It's all right, honey. You're going to be all right. Just don't drink today. And she's feeding her a cup of tea with honey in it, and she's the best sitter in the world. And I can't do that. But she can't do what I do. It would scare. She'd faint if she had to climb up one step. So we need everybody. So if you're a sitter, that's fine. And if you're a sitter who'd like to share, now is your time. Dick, next time, Jack.
Good morning. You've done great.
Thank you. Excuse me, Nancy. I just gave him a big kiss.
Hi, I'm Dick. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Midway Group in Sarasota.
You know, I think Deborah said something about how do you pick a home group, and I listened to her give all the reasons why I would want to belong to her home group if I was looking for one. You know, when I come in and I first went to this group, it was the fellow that took me to my first meeting ended up as my first sponsor, and that became my first home group. And you know, there was a sense of belonging, and they let me help him. He put me into the coffee pot when I first got there. But all of a sudden, I've become a very important part of that meeting. And, you know, those people actually wanted me to come back. Early on, I had a freeze plug go out in my car. And I needed a ride to the meeting, so my father lived next door, and I asked him for a ride to the meeting. And he took me down there. But he was taking me to this alcoholics meeting, you know. And then he said, well, how are you going to get home? And I said, no, they'll give me a ride. And he said, I better come down and get you. I said, no, I'll be okay. Well, he wasn't too sure about that. But anyway, you know, I got that ride home. And out of that group, they knew I had a problem. And one of the fellows that was a new acquaintance was going to come by and get me in the morning to take me to work. You see, what happened was I started to know people, and people started to know me. And they knew I was there because I had a problem. And like, by establishing identity and letting them get to know me, you know, I couldn't hide anymore. I was sharing with them, and I had to tell them the truth. And once they got to know me, then I had to live the part also. But, you know, it dawned on me when Harriet was talking about being treasurer that, you know, I was in the program 10 years before any group let me be the treasurer. But there was a message there. But I did just about everything into that group, and I did it willingly. Because, you know, you often hear them stand up and say, I belong to the best group in the world, you know. And then they say, if you don't belong to the best group in the world, don't go out and screw up another one. Stay there and straighten that one out. And, you know, I believe that's true, is you have to make these things happen. If you belong to that group and you take an active part in it, and if things aren't taking place, it's up to you to make them take place. You know, you sit into a meeting sometimes and the chairman don't show up and 20 people sit there. And, you know, it's our job to get up there and chair that meeting. You know, it's a responsibility. And when you belong to a home group, it's your responsibility. And it's a real sense of belonging, you know. And as you progress, you grow in the program. And I think you grow by the sharing that you take on. As you grow, you take on new responsibilities. And sooner or later, it becomes such an important part of you, you know, that all of a sudden you're giving to somebody else the things that they've given back to you. And, you know, I had a tragedy in my life earlier when I was in there. And the support that I had from the home group, I never got from my family. You know, the home group was there all the way, you know, from start to finish. And they recognize it. The minute things happen, they recognize it. And I had people that walked into that program. I mean, when I walked into those meetings and needed help the most, you know, I didn't have to tell them I had a problem. They could recognize it. And they got to know me that well. And people that weren't my sponsors. And one guy would pick up on me the minute I walked in, and he'd tell me the things that I had to do, and he'd see the changes I was making before I seen him in myself. It was very important in my sobriety, and it was much more important to my growth. And of course, as I go along and hear him talking about the traditions, at one point I had read someplace that there was a suggestion that the traditions be read at meetings. And we started our meeting, we put it on the format, and pretty soon somebody came in, and for some reason I was away from the group for a while, and they started... I heard somebody say, we're going to do this, the smorgasbord, take it like a smorgasbord. And I said, what's that? You know, and they read two traditions. And I said, that ain't the way we agreed to do it. And so I got to the point, and some of the other people accepted this way. But every time they'd ask me, I'd say, there's 12, and I'll read 12. And pretty soon the people I sponsored, I told them, if they ask you to read them, you read 12. And we worked it back to the way the group originally wanted it. And I think that's our responsibility. If things aren't happening, let's stay there and make them happen. The home group, I think, that's where I started, and that's where I'll end up. Thank you.
Thank you, sweetheart. Jack?
Hi, I'm Jack. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm a member of the Third Tradition Group in West Palm Beach. This is kind of a really neat place to be today, because if you go around here, you're going to see a lot of signs with the Third Tradition on them. As I was walking in here today, I think there's about at least 15 or 20 of our group are here, and it might have something to do that one of our group is kind of running this thing, so that's part of it. But Our group meets twice a week, and we've got a closed discussion meeting on Sunday night, and we've got a set meeting on Monday night. And we started out, I joined a group, it's the only group I've ever belonged to. I've been sober a little over 8 years. And the guy that answered the phone the morning I made the call invited me to that meeting. I made the call on a Sunday morning, invited me to that meeting, and I met him at that meeting that night. And then that week I went away to treatment and came back a month later, and I went on a Sunday, and I went to that meeting. And that's been my home group ever since. Nobody ever asked me to join. That's just my home group, you know. I think there's something really important in that, you know, the sense of belonging. Nobody ever asked me back anyplace. You've heard that. I never belonged to anything in my life, you know, because I'd be there a week or two or three and get drunk and make an ass out of myself, and, you know, that was the end of that. But no matter what I did, you know, and I was one of those people that sat. We used to meet in a little dingy room over on Belvedere Road in West Palm Beach. That if you got more than 15 people in it, it sunk so bad, you wanted to leave. And the meeting was so small on Sunday nights. Back then, we only had the Sunday night meeting. And it was so small, we didn't set chairs in rows like this. We set them around the wall. And we'd start at one end, and we could go all the way around the room in the course of an hour. So everybody had a chance, and you had to say something. Even if my name is so-and-so, and I'm an alcoholic, and I pass. But you had to say something, so that was good because it got to draw people out. It's changed a little now. I'm chairing our step meeting on Monday night, and a week ago last Monday night there were 120 people at our step meeting, and it loses something. It really does lose something. That kind of concerns me. But I heard the question come up about how do you attract people to your group, and it was alluded to in a sponsorship. To me, that's the answer. It's sponsorship. We have a guy and a gal who are sponsorship chairmen. And at each meeting, we identify them. If you need a temporary sponsor or a sponsor, see Sue and see, I don't know, who is it now, Jim? I can't remember who's the men's. Yeah. Right. So, you know, we identify them. You need a sponsor, you go see so-and-so. We hand out packets to the newcomer. Somebody takes a white chip, he gets a newcomer's packet, or she gets a newcomer's packet, and we make damn sure somebody sees them after that meeting. They don't all join the group. Another thing, when our secretary gives a report at each meeting, we ask for a secretary's report. He indicates that we're open for membership. He invites the people, or she invites the people to join. We're a real active group, and I think it's an interesting thing. We've got some older folks, and we've got some real young folks. We don't seem to have too many in between, but we got a lot of young folks in that group, and it's because of sponsorship. It's because of sponsorship that we got it, and a lot of good sobriety in those young people, a lot of active sobriety in those young people. And I think they come because of the sponsorship and because of the sobriety of the older people. We've got some, and service is a big thing in our group. There's three of us in our group that are active in general service. We've got our intergroup rep. We've got a rep that sits at the club meetings. We meet in the club room. We've got committee people that are on the committees here today. Anything that's going on, we've got somebody involved in it. We get people involved. We kind of force them into it. You know, you're going to be here at such and such a time. We've got three people, or at least three people, involved in every meeting. We've got the chairman who selects runs the meeting, selects the speaker and runs the meeting. We've got somebody to do the chips. We've got somebody to read how it works, and we run a raffle. So we've got four people involved. You know, somebody is involved in each one of those meetings, and I think that's important. Contrary to most big groups, you know, I've seen a lot of big groups that have three people show up at their business meeting. We've got 50 and 60 show up at our business meeting. I think I wasn't at the last business meeting, I was out of town, but the previous meeting before that, I think we had 45 people at a business meeting. And it got kind of nasty. It really did. We had some things going on that weren't, you know, whether it was going to be a smoking meeting or it wasn't going to be a smoking meeting, you know. And that's a big thing. Of course, we're in a club room, and it's kind of hard to make it a non-smoking meeting, and da-da-da-da-da, you know. And it got really nasty. It got really nasty. But afterwards, it was okay because those people, I got really out of line with one guy, and the guy stands about 6 foot tall and weighs about 300 pounds, and he's not known as a real nice guy. But we were able to go, I was able to go up to him afterwards and shake his hand, and everything was all right. Everything was all right. But it's that sense of belonging, it's that sense of involvement, it's that sense of somebody's willing to accept me for who I am. I'm an alcoholic, I'm trying to get better, and I belong here. And that's a real neat feeling. I never had that feeling any other time in my life. The traditions were mentioned, and obviously if we're involved in service, we're involved in traditions. There are 4-5 Sunday months in every year. I don't know, it just works out that way. And on the 5th Sunday of each of those 4 months, we have a traditions panel. And the last one, Harriet and Sam Smith and Francis Cherry were at. We bring them in and ask them to do a tradition apiece. So in the period of a year, on those 4 Sundays, we cover the 12 traditions in a panel format. And boy, I'll tell you, I've heard some really exciting, and it made the traditions interesting. It gave me an understanding of the traditions. And a lot of our young folks had never even heard of the traditions before. We got them up on a wall, and I think it was kind of like I heard somebody make the comment that the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous lost about 50% of their value when they took them out of the book and put them on the window shade. And I think the same thing happened with the traditions. They lost some of their value when they're taken out of their context. And but we get involved in that. We're developing that. And there's a lot of resentment about that a lot of times, too, about getting involved in the traditions. But it does work, and I'll tell you, if you don't belong to a group, you got to join one, and if you belong to one, you better be active in it, or you're going to be looking for another one. Thanks.
We have a handbook. It's called the AA Group, where it all begins. And this pamphlet, it says how a group functions and how to get started. It has 50 pages, and some of the titles: why do groups have officers? What do chairpersons do? How do group problems get solved? How do new groups get started? How do you become a group member? You've heard two ways. Some people get invited to join. Other people just hang around for 2 or 3 meetings and we accept you as a member. What is breaking my anonymity? Not an anonymity break. What's the difference between a meeting and a group? And if you don't have a copy of this, your group should have copies of it, and you should be using it as guidelines. I brought 2 along to call attention to the fact that even though they look the same, their dates are a little different. This was printed in February of 88, and you can tell that by opening it up. And on the inside page of any book or pamphlet, it tells you in small print down here when it was printed and how many copies. This 100,000 were printed. 2/88. This one was printed 100,000 copies, 7/86. There may be some slight changes in the one that was printed 2 years later. Every year there's a big business meeting in the city of New York called The Conference. And at the conference, sometimes your delegates, your representatives at this big business meeting, because that's what it is. It's just like your own home business meeting that you have every month, except it's the delegates from all over the United States and Canada having the big business meeting on our behalf, and they will make some changes amongst all of them. It's a unanimous thing. And something might change. So if you are having a dispute in your group, be sure you have the latest copy of this. Sometimes the changes are hardly noticeable, and sometimes they're very noticeable. And so another thing that happens in your group is if you have a good representative from your GSR, and I say good, meaning he or she keeps in touch with the general service meetings. They keep you abreast of these things. There has been a change in the pamphlet, she will tell you, or he will tell you. I'm very big on show and tell, and I brought a lot of stuff with me. Some groups don't know about certain things. This little pamphlet on the traditions is what got me started on loving traditions. It's illustrated, and it's just great for my infantile mind. You know, it has little black and white cartoons, and that appealed to me. And so if you think you don't understand them, try the cartoon route. I also brought with me, this is what many of us use as a guide, the General Service Manual, which includes the 12 concepts of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sometimes to people who've been sober a long time, I'll mention concepts. They say, oh, you mean the traditions. I say, no, I don't. You know, 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts. Well, here they are. They're in this book. And I'm not going to go into them now. I'm just telling you that there are 12 concepts. This is the new 1989 International AA Directory. Those of you who travel, it's all the outside the United States of America and Canada. It starts out the first group, and people who travel a lot, or particularly the airline people, it starts out with the groups in the American Samoa. Are you going over there tomorrow? And if not, the next group is Antarctica. And some of them, the Antarctica, the cracked ice group. Isn't that great? Then you can go to Antigua and Argentina. I walked into a group in Rio de Janeiro 2 years ago. And it was they talk a funny language down there. But I said, I'm from Miami. And they said, oh, do you know Jeff from the El Mario group? You go, you know, it's wonderful. You go all over the world, and they always say, do you know so-and-so? And usually you do. And then you go on over to Australia and Austria. And then, by golly, you know, Thailand, Trinidad, Tobago, Turkey, Uganda, Venezuela, The last group after Zambia, is Zimbabwe. You know, I think it's marvelous, from A to Z. People don't know about this. This is the loners. The loners and the homers. Homers are people who can't get out. They're too sick. They're in wheelchairs. They're bedridden. The loners are people who are all alone in an island or some big city in the mountains. This is the 86 directory. This is the order book, conference-approved literature and other service material. And it is suggested that in your group you keep your service material and your AA conference-approved literature on one side of the room or on one shelf, and you have another place for all your other stuff if you're going to keep it. Some people mix it all up, and a new AA member comes up and picks up a Hazelden guide and says, oh, this is AA. And it isn't. Hazelden is Hazelden, and conference-approved literature is good, is conference-approved. It doesn't mean that a Hazelden is bad. You know, the Holy Bible has not been approved by the conference, but it's a good book. You know? What it means is that AAs as a group have read this and said, this is good AA. Here's the AA quarterly report from the General Service Office. Quarterly report. It comes out 4 times a year. It's the activities of the General Service Board. These things are available to any AA member. Box 459, news and notes from the General Service Office of AA. And this goes out to professional men and women. It's about AA. And this particular one I've saved and I've made copies of because it talks about our singleness of purpose, which is central to our recovery. And this goes out to outside people to keep them abreast of what's going on in AA. There are many other things. This particularly, too, some of you are not familiar with the directories. It goes hand in hand with the international. This one happens to be the Eastern United States AA directory. There are 4 directories. This one and this one. Then there's the Western AA, Western States, and there's Canada. And they're available to any AA member. You must say that you're a member. And they used to be 75 cents each. I think they still are. Some of these things are like $1 a year things. But these are things that if you belong to a home group or hang around a certain group long enough, you'll know that these things are available. They're not always on the literature racks. But in these publications, you'll find things that are going on within AA. You know, some of us who have... I told you that I was now a member of the Coral Gables group. The little group that I joined back in 1956, I stayed there 3.5 years. But then, you remember that cute fella? I married him. And, yes, I did. And we moved, and we bought a home, and we moved, and we joined the Coral Gables group. And I've been a member of that group. And it's there that I got my service experience outside of just within the group. But if you're a member of a small group, you may not realize the magnitude of coming in. Some of you, this may be the largest AA meeting you've ever come to. And when we meet tonight for dinner, and the speaker and all the people like last night will be in the same room, I think it's a magnificent experience. You know, wall-to-wall drunks. Isn't that beautiful? And to go to a state convention with 3,000 people and you ask for a moment of silence and you can hear a pin drop. 3,000 drunks being quiet for a whole minute. Who else would like to share? Yes, come on up. Who else had their hand up over here? Okay, I'll get you next. You know, the book tells us that most of us, self-centeredness, selfishness, that was the root of our problem. You get self-centered people into an AA group, and you can't be self-centered long. You know, this is sharing, you share with one another, and it takes away from that self-centeredness. We get out of self to help another person. All right. Jackie.
I'm Jackie. I'm a grateful alcoholic. And I'm up here trying not to be selfish, sharing my experience, strength, and hope with you. And it's marvelous, this workshop. Sponsorship weekend is really meaning a lot to me. I've had two sponsors in 15 years of sobriety. And I've asked people and been rejected and that kind of thing. So I know how hard it is to get a sponsor that you have something in common with. But I love you, Harriet. You know, you're really into the fellowship. And in my experience in the past 15 years, in my hometown, there was a river that divided the city. How many towns are like that? I became a bleeding deacon. As the old-timers, you know what I'm talking about. The elderly statesperson is who I like to think I am today. But there are the doers, there are the sitters. And sometimes today I sit back and really be selfish. So today I decided to get up here and share with you that, you know, nobody can do anything wrong in this program. We just try and do our best, you know. Sponsoring people today means a whole lot for me. It fills up the void and it gives me the ability to give away what you guys give to me. When I came to this program, I was only 20 years old. I was just a baby, you know. But I liked what you had to offer, unconditional love, you know, because the bars didn't offer that, and the men in those bars didn't offer that. And so to me, a home group, too, means a lot. My first home group was the Young People's Group in El Paso, Texas, and it was met every Thursday night, and I got kicked out of that club. I used to be the club goer, you know. In recovery, I found that my spirituality, it's found in meetings in churches. It doesn't matter what church it is, but it's the spirituality that I look for today. But in early recovery, I was crazy. I was on a Greyhound bus going back and forth to El Paso, Texas, to Michigan. So it's all in what you need and all in what you want from this fellowship. Getting active in the traditions, I learned that by doing a newspaper for this divided town. You know, we had the doers over here and the sitters over here, and so I did the traditions in the cartoon form, and it was great because it taught me about the traditions. I don't know if it changed anybody's opinion about what the fellowship is and sharing and giving and helping one person stay sober today. The thing, bottom line, is it helped me stay sober. You know, without this fellowship, I wouldn't be here. I know that at 20 years old, I hit rock bottom, and I'm real grateful. Thanks for letting me share. Okay.
Hi, I'm Donna. I'm an alcoholic and a member of the South Bay group in Miami. And I found that group a year ago when I called information, and I needed the closest thing to home, and that was like a mile and a half down the street. And I went in on the 11 o'clock meeting, and that's a large group. We have three meetings a day. Some days we have four meetings. We have a lot of members. Some members I don't even know, because now that I work, I can only make the 8:30 meetings, and there's all kinds of people in the 5:30 meetings that I don't know. But I had an opportunity at the beginning to go to the morning meetings, and I got sober in the morning meetings, and I met a lot of good women there. And then, of course, going to the evening meetings, I've met so many people. And like Harriet was saying in the beginning, the home group, to me, my home group is so important to me, because when I came in, I was scared. I was isolated. I knew the loneliness that it talks about in the big book. And eventually I was able to opened myself up because I was afraid. I didn't want to drink anymore, and I knew the only thing I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous was that people didn't drink anymore. That they knew how to stay sober, and that's what I wanted. So I came in, and slowly I allowed myself to open up, and I allowed you people to know me a little bit. And when I was 6 weeks sober, my father passed away, and I needed you people there, and you were there for me. And that night, I worked the coffee bar, and I've been working the coffee bar once a week ever since then. And I've been able to see people come in and get to know new people that I wouldn't have known otherwise, because I'm not this kind of person that just goes up to anybody that I don't know and start talking to them. So by being working in the coffee bar, I've had the opportunity to get to know people that way, and it's helped me grow by watching other people come in and just being, you know, just being there. I have a key to the room, and just knowing that I have that key makes me feel good, because it's my home. And we just moved, our group moved to a new location, and we renovated the room. It took, I guess, like 2 months, and a lot of people in the group gave their time and their skills, and they built this beautiful room, and it's twice the size of the old room that we had, and we still only have standing room only. But it's, you know, it's like home for me, and I just love being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.
Come on. Love to see those hands go up. Mike. Okay.
Hi, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Mike. And I'm real grateful to be here today. My home group, which is Pass It On Group, which I'm active in, is real important to me. And it's helped me, I can't tell you how much, in this road of sobriety. Our group, that Pass It On Group, was the Serenity Group when I first met it. And it was it's at a halfway house that I went to in Fort Myers. And what happened was, there wasn't much participation in that group in the probably 6 months that I went to it before we took it over and changed it into the Pass It On Group. And it was suggested by an elder statesman that we take over that group and get involved in AA. And I'd been doing a lot of things in AA, and because it was suggested to me to get involved, make coffee and chair meetings, and I did that because I was real scared and I didn't want to go back. And when we started that Pass It On Group, I belonged. You know, it wasn't just, you know, making coffee and everything else made me feel good, but that was our group. That was a bunch of people that started that group, or people that had been in that halfway house together, and we knew each other as only alcoholics can know each other, and we got involved. I'm the intergroup rep, and we got involved with the general service, and we've got our secretary, and you know, I love that group, and I love all the people in it, and we got a lot of newcomers in that group, and we have two meetings a week. We have a step meeting, and we have an open discussion meeting, and it's been such an important part of my recovery. I'll be sober 2 years in July, and without that sense of home, I wouldn't be as far along as I am now. I know Debbie and Joe Kay real well, and I saw them getting involved when I was early in AA, and you know, Joe would give me that kick in the butt and say, you know, you don't have to be a member of this, you don't have to be this, you don't have to be that, just get involved. You know, he says, if you want to be involved, he said, you just do it. And he showed me how, you know, and he nurtured me. And that's what it's been for me, you know. Like, I heard a lot about love in these rooms, and I heard a lot about a higher power. And I found that by getting involved. And you know, it's been a real miracle, and I've seen a lot of miracles in these rooms. You know, I had, when I first got here, I was scared, and I didn't believe in God, And I just didn't want to go back to that misery. And I didn't think that I was going to make it. And as the primary purpose of every group, and that 12th step, and what helped me, I think, more than anything else, that third tradition, when I finally did read it all the way through, and began to feel what those traditions meant, and feel a part of AA by participating, it's just been a real miracle, and I'm so grateful for my home group, and I'm a member of a lot of other groups too, and I stay involved because that's what it takes for me. I have to stay real busy, and I catch a lot of flack for that sometimes, but it's okay. It's okay. And I don't know. I'm real grateful to be here, man. Thanks for letting me share.
I've heard several of us have mentioned having the key to the church and what a great responsibility that was, and being treasurer and having money. And a lot of us have mentioned coffee. But you know, one of the first things anybody seems to do, I think, in AA is the ashtrays. You know, we pick up the ashtrays and we empty them. Sometimes we even take a piece of Kleenex and wipe them out. And the chairs, you know, the folding chairs. We straighten up the room after the meeting. We set it up before the meeting. And the newest of newcomers can do those things. And this is service. So when we talk about service at a little different level and you say, well, I'll never be able to do that, you don't have to be able to do that. Just the very first thing is to, Mike just said it, you know, report for duty. That's all. Report for duty, and whatever there is to be done, you do it. Yes, sir, come on up. This is Peter.
Thank you. Peter.
Right.
Peter is correct. Thank
Peter.
You.
All right?
Yes. Thank you. My name's Peter. I'm an alcoholic. And thank God for these classrooms. And and I can even remember some of the things I heard that I want to remember. But when we're talking about home groups, it's strange if, as a recovering alcoholic, you can love something very dearly and not realize that you love it, or I do with my personality. But our home group happens to be the Fort Lauderdale Men's Group down in Fort Lauderdale. And as I was just reviewing things, that as it started, I had thought, a good friend of mine, and I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous, as you found out in clubhouses, that I'd been a couple of years sober. I hadn't drank. And I was finding out that you could buy cigarettes in a clubhouse. You didn't have to go to a saloon to buy cigarettes. And I found out you could make a telephone call other than a saloon. I was so programmed to alcohol, and it took me a couple of years to realize that you could do that. And the club, thank God for the clubhouse. One of the fellows that were, I played gin rummy like I played gin rummy, went to the racetrack like I went, and I found out that there fellas that could do things that I like to do, and I didn't have to drink. And that was a surprise. But he said, well, we're having a meeting. We're going to start a group, a men's group. And we met over at an insurance guy's office, Jim's, and there were seven of us, and put it together. I didn't know exactly what was going on, but sure. And that's where it started, the seven of us. And the seven of us are sober today, too, which is just proof that this program works. But one of the things that I wanted to report that was a very important lesson to me, they said, Pete, you buy the coffee pot. And I said, we got a coffee pot here. We're in Jim's office. And they said, no, we'll need a big coffee pot. And I said, well, how big? They take care of it. And I have a habit of saying yes to anything and then instantly regretting it. I started making the engineering project out of the damn coffee pot that I started. I was familiar with 50 cups, 75 cups, 100 cups. I was knowledgeable. But I didn't know what to buy. So across the street from the 12-step house was a Tuxedo Restaurant Supply. So I decided that's where I should start. And I better not go alone. Better take somebody with me. So I took my good friend. I told him we need the coffee pot. And he said, for who? And I'd be damned if I'd tell him it was for AA. And so I just didn't answer him. I was a little embarrassed about AA. And so we set the deal, and I bought the coffee pot. And then he asked me again who it was for. As he's making out the bill, he was going to save me this. I couldn't think of the Boy Scouts or the Children of Mary Society or. And I'm an Irish Catholic third generation, and I can usually grab something out of the air. He asked me again in a louder voice, and my pal that I took around with me was not here to back me up. He was out looking at beer steins or something like that, or shot glasses in the restaurant supply. But his voice, he heard the question, and he said, AA, from way over in the other part of the store. There's nobody else in the place other than this nice merchant, nice owner of the place, myself and my friend. But that seemed to echo right off the rafters, AA. And then the owner said, AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. And he says, you guys saved my brother's life up in Boston. And I said, yeah. And he said, he couldn't stop drinking for Mama or Papa or the rabbi. He couldn't stop drinking. And a couple of guys from AA came around. He doesn't drink. And bang, I saw the first miracle of AA. 10% came off the price. The second miracle was I pulled out a checkbook at Connecticut Bank, and this was 23 years ago, and because we just had our splash, our anniversary party 3 weeks ago in the end of May, so I'm sure it's 23 years ago the group has started. And so I just wrote them a check. And 23 years ago in Fort Lauderdale, you didn't take an out-of-town check from anybody without identification or anything. No hesitation at all. Sam Baby, I became friends with him afterwards. He said, thank you for AA and thank you for the purchase. Anything else you need, you get a discount. And right from there on, I knew I was in the right gang. And it fortified my sobriety that sober is okay. You know, I got an old saying that I've been drunk and I've been sober. Sober is better.
Deborah, in her opening remarks, had said, how do you make a group more attractive? I'll tell you, you got to have good coffee. You know, AA group can rise or fall on the coffee. And I think also the cookies. You know, you got to have cookies. I remember one group that was a very successful group, and they always had good cookies and good cakes, and people looked forward to the refreshments. But one night the cake was removed before we all could get in there. And I said, what happened? They said they had delivered by mistake a rum cake. Well, some of us went out in the kitchen to taste it, and it was delicious. Yes, ma'am, come on up.
My name is Sue, and I'm an alcoholic. Member of the Boca Central group here in Boca Raton. I came today because I was thinking of leaving my home group, and I heard what I needed to hear today, which is that I have to hang in there. I remember back the first home group meeting that I went to, and I was shocked. I guess, when you first come in, how raw your feelings are and how confrontation is such a difficult thing to handle. At least it was for this alcoholic. And there was a lot of heated discussion in that first business meeting, and if I had been closer to the door, I would have walked out. It made me uncomfortable and unhappy. I know this isn't I've got a question and you give me the answer, but if anybody has the answer later that you can come up with, a way of when newcomers come in and they come into that first home group meeting to ease their uncomfortableness with that confrontation, be aware that they may be going through that type of uncomfortable feeling. I don't have the answer to that, but I think we have to be very aware of it. I've seen at least in the last year 5 people walk out of a home group meeting because of the, not bickering, but, you know, heated discussions going back and forth as to what decisions will be made. So if you can help me after the meeting and in finding ways to ease that for the newcomer, and we really want them to stay, don't we? Please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you. Another hand up. That's wonderful. If anyone has any answers, she'll be right over there by the door. Don't leave.
I'm Chuck Adams, and I'm an alcoholic. I was sitting back there thinking about the first time I got a home group. I am a member of the Young at Heart group in Fort Myers. My first home group was in a little town called Floral City up in North Florida. And when I first came in there, they assigned me a job of a treasurer. And I mean, this is like just walking in the door. They just, you know, I'd like to join this home group, and they say, great, you're the treasurer. You know, at that time, I really didn't think I needed the responsibility, but they gave it to me, and it taught me a big thing, you know, that responsibility. You know, and I've come to believe today that I think that, well, not so much I think, but I believe that the coffee pot is the heart of any AA group, it seems like. If you don't believe me, just show up to make coffee 5 minutes before the meeting starts. I think the important thing, though, for me was that the home group taught me three real important things. It taught me about God, the traditions. You know, they state God so many times. It helped me with my self-esteem. It gave me something back, you know. I am worthwhile. You know, I can do this. You know, these people have faith in me. I learned to have faith. And also, you know, probably the biggest thing was, you know, getting out of my self-centeredness, doing something for somebody else. You know, as many times as I hear in these meetings, you need to get active. You need to get active. And I've been in some awfully big meetings and have a membership in a home group of maybe 2 or 3 people out of a meeting the size of 60, you know. It's really sad to see for me, you know, that because there's just so many people in the program that just come and sit and just listen. You know, as many times as I hear, get active, get active, get active, there's got to be something to it, you know. I learned it in the very beginning, you know. I learned to get active in my home group, you know. And the camaraderie that comes out of it, you know, the fellowship, you know, of belonging was a big thing with me. And with that, I'm very grateful. Thank you.
I was thinking about the question of the bickering and that goes on in some meetings, particularly in business meetings. You know, some of us don't all get well. You know, some of us are going to bicker the rest of our lives. We come here for our primary purpose is to stay sober. And that doesn't mean we're going to get sweet and lovable and gentle. You know, it doesn't mean that. Some of us don't change that much, or else we change and become something we never were. So human nature is what it is. We only have a few more minutes. We've been asked to leave at 10:30, but I see a hand up. That's lovely. And it may be the last one of the morning session. No, I don't mean the last one. Well, you know, I loved our speaker last week. But the laughter, I've heard the laughter here in this room, and yet we're discussing the home group, which could mean life or death. And it's wonderful to be able to laugh with each other on this wonderful subject. Hi, Dallin. Fine, how are you?
Good.
I thought your name was Jack. It's John.
John.
That just goes to show you we have a good forgetter. I was sitting with her at breakfast this morning. You know, First of all, my name's John Phillips, and I'm an alcoholic. And I've got three home groups that I'm active in, and I call them my home groups. I'm actually a member of one, but I attend the other three on a regular basis. I make at least two meetings a day, and sometimes three, and on the weekends I make four a day. My home group that I could claim a home group to would be the 11th Step Group in Cocoa. It's nice to see Brevard County represented so well here today. I used to think that being a responsible member of Alcoholics Anonymous meant being responsible for the membership of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I tried this program every way possible. This time I'm trying it without drinking, and it seems to be working a little bit better. It seems to be working a little bit better that way. You know, Patty was talking last night, and I'll never forget what she said about sitting at the breakfast table or at 3 o'clock in the morning reading a big book and drinking a fifth of whatever her choice might be at the time. She said she drank religiously. I did that for years. I really enjoyed her talk last night. Talking about sponsorship, I've watched many a TV program where an intern in a hospital would get his clipboard and he would go making his rounds. And he would walk in a room and he would look at the clipboard on the patient's bed there, and he would diagnose the case and he would prescribe whatever he felt necessary for the recovery. And this patient may live or die. Didn't matter to him. He had other patients to call on. He would continue making his rounds. I don't believe that sponsorship should be handled that way. I've heard people say that, so what? You stayed sober. I don't buy that crap. To me, sponsorship is a serious thing. I think a lot of people confuse sponsorship and 12-step work. I don't think they should be considered synonymous. I have a lot of opportunities to temporarily sponsor people. And by temporary, I mean, for the day or for a couple of days, just to get them through whatever they're going through when they first come in the room and they're sitting on their hands. And what I usually do, since I certainly can't be all things to all people, is I bundle this person up and I take them to my sponsor. And I let them get a cross-reference of different opinions, and I get them to a meeting. I don't try to push my ideas and my viewpoints on a person to the point to where that their sobriety is contingent upon me. I don't want that responsibility to where that another person's life is in my hands. I still, to this day, cannot understand how one person can sponsor 15 or 20 people. I just don't understand it. I had a sponsor one time in Cocoa, and she sponsored about 20 or 25 different people. And I had her every bit of about a week, because the third time I called her and she didn't have time for me, I went somewhere else. I know of sponsors that seem to sponsor the whole town in one way or another. Their sponsor, these sponsor another, and they sponsor one. But if you want to know where their ideas came from, it all comes right back from that one person. I can't run my program like that. I have to have a cross-reference, a cross-view of different ideas and different opinions. Although I have a home group, and I have three or four groups that I attend on a regular basis, I like to get out and go to other groups, around over the country. I think this is a wonderful thing, that this workshop down here. And it's given me an opportunity to open up, to get out, to meet people in different places. And I think that's what it's all about, is getting an open mind. And I think for the first time in my life, I'm beginning to get open-minded. Instead of being an airhead, I'm getting open-minded. And there's a difference in being an airhead and being open-minded. I thank all of you for being here today and for allowing me to share it with you. Thank you.
I, too, visit many groups. In fact, there are two groups that I visit on a fairly regular basis, along with my own home group. But it's in my home group that I take an active part, and where I feel that I can vote with some kind of information. Our tradition tells us that we should have an informed group conscience. And if I know what's going on in my group, I can vote with some kind of intelligence. I certainly wouldn't think of voting in the business meeting of one of the other groups that I attend on a regular basis. However, they do sometimes ask me for my opinion, like an elder statesman. And so that I don't become a bleeding deacon, I say, no, I'm not going to offer you any suggestions in your group. This is your group. Although if they push me, I'm liable to give my opinion. But my home group is where I need to be for voting purposes and for group conscience. I thank you for your wonderful participation. This has been a great workshop. Let's thank each other. Good. Let's close this meeting and with the Lord's Prayer.